Good morning, church family. The most common command in all the Bible is simply love one another. The greatest command in all the Bible is to love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is likened unto us, to love our neighbor as ourselves. If there's one thing that just about everybody is for, it is at least the concept of love. I believe that the greatest, most Christ-like thing you and I could be as disciples of Jesus is to be determined to be better lovers, to love more deeply, more meaningfully, and more effectively. So we're going to be talking this morning about a very special lesson. I like to call this linguistic lessons in love. How do we communicate love effectively? You know, the soldier on the battlefield is often known by his uniform of gray, and the nurse is known for her uniform of often white. And the policeman on the beat is known frequently for his uniform of blue. But the Christian is to be known because we are wrapped in a cloak of love. We have been loved so magnificently by Jesus, and those who have freely received should now freely give. Everybody's for love. The problem is so many people are like two ships passing in the night. They've not figured out how to do this in a way that is truly impactful on the object of the one that we are trying to love. A part of this confusion comes simply because in the English language, we use love to describe a variety of different types of relationships. For example, I can tell you this morning that I love God. I also love my wife, and I got to be with my two children and four grandchildren in the last several days. I love my children. I love my grandchildren. But I guarantee you that those are different kinds of love. My love for my wife is different than my love for my children. And none of them really compare to my love for God. And I can really complicate this by telling you that I love peanut butter, and I do. But to even talk about loving peanut butter in the same sentence, hardly, as I love my wife, might get me in trouble if I'm not careful. But we just use the term love so broadly that sometimes we don't really understand what we're saying, and neither do the people around us. So let me begin by reminding us that there are three broad brush types of love. The first one is the one that the songwriters love to major in. No doubt over a million songs have been penned praising its virtues. Romantic love. May I suggest that romantic love is primarily not something we choose as much as something just that happens? I mean, we talk about love at first sight. What we really mean is attraction at first sight. But we don't wake up one morning and say, hey, I'm going to fall in love this morning or this evening. Typically, we reflect back on a courtship and we look at something that was almost done to us instead of something that was planned. Then there's something even more important than romantic love, but divine, agape love, which is an act of the will. This is love as an attitude. This is what John 3 and verse 16 is talking about when we're told that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, and whosoever believeth on him shall not perish but have everlasting life. God didn't have romantic love for the citizens of planet Earth. That's not what this verse is talking about. The word there is again, agape love, divine love, and that is that in spite of us being undeserving of love, God chose to love us, more of a reflection of who he is than who we are, candidly. We choose this kind of love. And in Matthew chapter 5, verses 44 and 45, Jesus says, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. I am so glad this verse doesn't say like your enemies. This really doesn't have anything to do specifically with some sort of warm emotion. It's kind of hard to command feelings, right? But you can decide that I'm not going to act in the negative ways that my enemies are acting toward me. I can decide that I'm going to show active goodwill toward even people that may be out to kill me, as was the case with the early Christians in the persecution. You can decide, even though it's not the natural thing, the carnal man doesn't want you to respond to someone who's cursing you with a blessing, but the spiritual man says, I'm going to return a curse with a blessing. And that's one of the ways you know that God's working in your life and not the things of the flesh. So this is an attitude. This is a determined way to be. And then a third type of love that is often overlooked. I think we in the church have done a really good job of making a distinction between the first two, romantic love and agape love. Heard a lot of lessons on that growing up, and for good reason. But it wasn't until about 25 years ago that I began to really process love as an emotional need. This is something that requires some insight and wisdom. It also does not come naturally, but it is something that we can and we are commanded to develop. Years ago, I hadn't been married very long. My wife and I were studying together. Titus 2, verses 4 and 5. Let the older women admonish the younger women to love their husbands and to love their children. My wife says, you're a preacher, explain that to me. Hate it when she does that. No, I'm in trouble. But what she said was, shouldn't it come natural for me to love you? I married you because I love you, and don't I have a natural maternal instinct to love my children? So why do I need to go to some old lady in order to teach me how to love you and my, at that case, yet-to-be-born children? That was really a very appropriate question. If you look up the word here, the older women are to admonish the younger women to love their husbands. The word there is phileo. So wives are told to phileo their husbands. That's not fillet, ladies. That's phileo. It's a huge difference. The idea of phileo in the Greek is an emotional warmth. Create a liking so that when you're with your husband, you are really enjoying each other's company. Or when you're with your children, there is an exchange in a way that, for lack of a better term, is depositing emotional love units in your love bank so that the other person feels loved. There's a whole lot of people who say they love their children or they love their spouse, but are they doing it in ways that really connect and that really make a difference? You see, the problem is we all say love differently. We do. One person may decide to show his love with flowers. Another may stop and just give a nice kiss. Another may decide to spend some quality time reading a book to a child. And yes, some may do it by washing the wife's car. I saw this years ago. I liked it. It's by Sally Forth. It says, I ran your car through the car wash, then I decided to get the oil changed too, so you wouldn't have to worry about it. That's so sweet, Ted. Ted responds, Some guys say it was flowers, others say it was car maintenance. And a lot of wives appreciate their husbands saying it with those kinds of things. This is really a simple yet profound concept. And one of my favorite marriage and family authors is Dr. Gary Chapman. And many of you in the audience, either here today at Kirkland or listening to this on our radio audience, in our radio audience, may be familiar with the book, The Five Loves. The Secret to a Love That Lasts. And when I first read this, and I recommend this book highly, it was like this aha experience. It was like, oh, I saw these linguistic lessons in love as being something that in some ways are common sense, but in other ways, as an act of communication, it was just often overlooked. And one of the things I love about this is that though Dr. Chapman primarily in his book refers to this in regards to the marriage relationship, this refers very well to the entire family. Whether it's your kids or your grandkids or your son-in-laws or your grandparents, it goes both ways. Love is an emotional need, requires insight and wisdom in all your different family relationships. And the concept is cross-cultural. Regardless of what background or ethnicity someone comes from, I found everybody can relate to the concept of love languages. And a lot of times, different cultures speak different languages more loudly than others. And understanding that is one of the keys to relating better to people from different cultures. And regardless of what your particular status is in life right now, we're all here today because we are to be a part of a church family. And all of us together, as a part of the Kirkland Church family, can learn to obey these passages to love one another better and avoid being like two ships passing in the night by understanding first what your primary love languages are and what the love languages are of the important people around you. So, we're going to do basically three things today, very quickly. We're going to look first at what the five love languages are, if you're not aware of them. We're going to look at some principles of how to use them, and then in the invitation, we're going to make some spiritual applications that I think will be a blessing to you, at least it has been to me. So, let's look at the very first primary love language that I found many people have. Someone sent me a text just last week. She knew that I knew about these things, and she said, I just want you to know, my love language is verbal affirmation, saying it with words. And I thought, well, this person needs a compliment, right? Hey, the way you can fill up my love tank is to give me something affirming. And nothing wrong with that. I love Mark Twain. He had so many amazing, neat statements that he made during his life. He said on one occasion, I could live for a solid 2 weeks off of one really good compliment. We know what he meant by that, don't we? Something that really resonated with him, that just emotionally buoyed him. And a lot of people have words of affirmation as their primary love language. The key is that you have to learn to be sincere in what you say. Somebody thinks it's just a pickup line, something you say to everybody. You know, people think you're just guilty of flattery. Obviously, that's not going to resonate. People have to first and foremost know that it is sincere. Remember, 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 1, we're told that love edifies. So to do this properly, you want to do it in a way that truly builds up. And the wisest man that ever lived said, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. It also needs to be specific, if at all possible. Now, you men, listen up, because we tend to sometimes lack specificity in our compliments. I mean, you look nice today is, you know, fine, especially if it's said sincerely. But for me to come out and tell my wife, Gail, wow, that dress looks so good on you. Red is so much your color. Being specific just seems to indicate that, hey, I've noticed, I'm attentive. It's not just some generality. You know, wow, you really look good in coral lipstick. Really? Yes, that's the kind of specificity that tends to resonate with people. And of course, our children need words of affirmation, encouragement. In fact, research has said that in a really healthy home, that the positive comments outweigh negative words of correction as much as 5 to 1, and in some cases, 10 or 20 to 1. So, should you catch your children when they do something wrong and correct them? Of course, that's a part of good parenting. But you also need to make sure that the ratio is at least 5 to 1 positive at a minimum. And you catch your children doing something right and then affirm them for that. Words like excellent or great job or super really means a lot to children. And that way, your children are raised in a home where there's an atmosphere of acceptance and affirmation rather than criticism. This was a picture that was taken of our brother Rick Taylor with his niece and nephew, Malaya and Jonah. And he just loves his nieces and nephews and his children. And I just appreciated seeing on Facebook how affirmative Rick has been toward so many children and also toward his relatives. Dan Hyung is here today, and they are his children. So not just parents. Everybody needs to be trying to do what they can to affirm children. One of the things you need to do is look for the good and really make sure that you build on it. Amy, I really like the way you shared that toy with Allison. That's something that's such a wonderful trait. Keep it up. See, sometimes we don't want to say anything until we have a correction. That's the exact opposite. Anytime you see something really affirming, particularly when it comes to someone's character, affirming the person's character is more important than affirming their appearance. Both matter, but what they need to really appreciate is how special they are as an individual. Look for the good and build on it. And brag on the good qualities of others in their presence. Isn't that really good, the way the kids are sharing and they've learned to respect one another? You say so they can overhear it. Did you know that overheard communication is 5 times more powerful than direct communication? Something about your children overhearing you, bragging about them and their good qualities that just really affirms them as a person. Remember when my kids were little, they were constantly drawing things and coloring things and then running in all excited and saying, Dad, do you like the picture that I colored? And I'd say, yes, Allison, it's a really good job. But you know what? You know what I like even more is the person who drew it. And she just breaks out in a big smile and goes back to paint me another picture, right? So you always want to look for ways that you can brag on that person's good character traits and stress the person behind the deed. It's really easy for me to do this with my wife, Gail. Honey, you are such a good person. First thing you do, you wake up in the morning and you sit down with your prayer list and you pray and you send so many notes out the door, notes of encouragement to so many people. Thank you for your good example. I mean, she's the real deal. And it's a blessing to see her living her Christian life 24/7. Our loved ones around us need to feel affirmed much more than they need to feel criticized. So, particularly those of you that are married, how often do you say, "I love you"? Purdue University did a study, and they found only 20% of long-time marriages, people who have been married 20 years or longer, does either spouse express verbal affection on a daily basis. In 80% of marriages, the words "I love you" are exchanged less than once a week. It doesn't take much time to just simply say, "Good night, I love you," or to send a text, or to just constantly reaffirm the fact that you are crazy about the other person. Words of affirmation. The second love language is receiving gifts, or saying it with presents. I think we're all aware in our relationships that gifts are a particularly special and important part of affirming one another. A gift says that while we were apart, you were thinking about me. A gift is something that all cultures can relate to. There's not any kind of anthropological study as far back as we can go that the giving and receiving of gifts was an important part of their culture and affirming their relationships. The key when it comes to giving and receiving gifts is to find out what the other person likes and give based upon what you know they like, not what you like. Most men are not particularly thrilled about a gift of cut flowers. It's sort of one of those male-female things. But if the man knows that the wife really loves to receive flowers, and so he gives it because she likes it, even though they might be a bit impractical because they start dying as soon as you put them in the water. But the point is that if the wife really likes those cut flowers, and you give that to her, then that's one of the things that really says "I love you" in a meaningful way, because you are thinking about what she wants. I read a book recently about a couple on their 15th wedding anniversary. And the husband decided, "Well, I'm going to fix my wife breakfast in bed to honor her on our anniversary." And so he, you know, fixed her breakfast with all the trimmings, and he comes back up a few moments later and says, "Can I get you anything?" And she's crying. She's got a tear going down her cheeks. He goes, "What's wrong?" And she says, "Well, you know, you gave me, there's a whole loaf of bread down there, and you gave me the heel. And I've told you over and over again, I don't like the heel. This is supposed to be celebrating our anniversary." And he goes, "Yeah, I know. I thought about that when I was making this breakfast, but you know, that's my favorite piece, so I wanted you to have it." Well, it may be your favorite piece, but if it's not her favorite piece, and she's been trying to tell you that for years, it actually hurts her rather than pleases her when you bring up what you like instead of what she likes. This idea of giving meaningful gifts can have a big impact, for good or for bad, on someone's relationships. I usually use my dad as a good example because he was such a good guy, but let me tell you one area where my dad really blew it. My dad loves to play ping pong. And so for my parents' 25th wedding anniversary, because they'd been talking about how the ping pong table we had was kind of, you know, warped and needed to be replaced, and she'd said that would be a good idea. So this big, huge truck pulls in the yard and says, special package for Louise Hunter. And I remember all of us kids were running out all excited. What is it? What is it? You know, this big Ryder truck has to deliver this big heavy gift. And my dad says, well, open it, open it. And so he allowed us kids to help open it. And I remember my sisters going, it's a ping pong table. Dad got mom a ping pong table. See, my dad loves ping pong. My mother rarely plays. It's not a good thing, Dad. That was not his best moment. He didn't return it, but he did get her something else later that she really liked for their wedding anniversary. And being obtuse, as he was sometimes about these types of things, he said, but you told me you thought it was a good idea. You think about what she wants, not what you want. The key is this needs to be thoughtful, not necessarily expensive. The homemade card, the thoughtful piece of prose. Probably the most treasured gift that I have that Gail has ever given me is a really nice, meaningful love letter that I still have in my desk drawer that she wrote for our 25th wedding anniversary. She gave me a physical gift too. I don't even remember what it was. But that was a really meaningful expression of her heart. So receiving gifts, saying it with notes, with presence, can be an especially meaningful thing. It's especially meaningful when the giver sacrifices in order to provide for the need of the recipient. In other words, if you give up something that's a sacrifice for you in order to give the gift, then that really resonates. And people sometimes say, well, you didn't have to do that. And the answer is, well, you're correct, I didn't. But if I had to, it wouldn't mean anything. See, it's the fact it's from the heart. And that's one of the reasons why in the Lord's Supper that we'll commune in just a few moments, it just means so much that Jesus sacrificed his life and became a curse on the cross so that we could receive the ultimate blessing. Thanks be to God for the unspeakable gift of his Son. It was a sacrificial gift. Another love language that happens to be my wife's favorite is saying it with deeds. 1 John 3 and verse 18, love not in word, but in deed. And so if you can fix a meal that the other person or family members really enjoy, my wife always says it was made with love. That's exactly right. You've been over to our house, that's the way my wife says, I care about you, I love you. She does a good job at it. Love not in word, but in deed. Her motto is, talk is cheap. You show love by what you do, not just by saying words. And it took me a long time to figure out that, though I tend to be more a word person, that Gail appreciates a love letter from me, but what she really appreciates me is emptying the trash before she has to ask. Or she comes home and I've vacuumed and done stuff around the house that she would normally do. It's true. Acts of service. Saying it with deeds. Doing for the other person things they'd really like to have done. So the guy who chips in and helps with the laundry, or the family members who go out and rake up the leaves so the yard looks nice, it's another way of saying, I love you. Acts of service. Some show their love for others simply by doing things for them. So figure out what they like to have done, and you're very wise then to do that on a regular basis without complaining. Sometimes a person feels overwhelmed, and when you step up to help out, it really makes a difference. This picture here shows a woman that could use some help with her filing, don't you think? Another quality love language is spending quality time, undivided attention. This was my father's love language. I mean, he just loved to take people out to eat because that's when you could really visit and have quality one-on-one time. C.S. Lewis said, "No time spent with a child is ever wasted." And so instead of feeling rushed, you go fishing together, or you fly a kite, or you even make sure you make it a priority to pray with your children at night. Undivided attention. Jesus obviously loved quality time. First with the Father, he spent a lot of time with God, but we also were told that he ordained the 12 that they should be with them. In other words, the 12 apostles were selected out of the multitude so he could really spend quality time with them. And with inside the circle of the 12, the inner circle of Peter, James, and John were also people that he spent special time with. There's very few ways that you can better express love and mold character than with quality time. We looked at this last week about Jesus and the time he spent with little children so he might touch them and bless them. And it's a good thing for our children to feel physical touch, make a meaningful connection. Someone has said 3 hugs a day keep the marriage counselor away. There's a lot of truth in that. But it's not just male-female relationships. Even men, at a time where comfort is needed, can give a heartfelt hug and meaningfully connect. Touch is more important to some than to others. Meaningful touch has blessed us by, this is a UCLA study, raising the hemoglobin level in our blood, thus increasing the body's ability to heal itself. It lowers blood pressure and increases our lifespan. It gives us increased levels of energy and enthusiasm, makes us feel more positive about life and those with whom we interact. This UCLA study found that in order to maintain physical and emotional health, the average man or woman needs about 6 to 8 meaningful touches a day. So, if you need a hug and you happen to be around loved ones who are kind of clueless, you need to give them permission by issuing them a hug license. So I have one of these hug licenses up here with me, and there's a bunch on the table. Now, this is for you huggers to fill out and give to the non-huggers. You got it? This is just a reminder. You are hereby licensed to give and receive hugs. Everyone participating in this warm, loving gesture will experience one of life's simplest and most enjoyable pleasures. And on the back it says, 4 hugs a day for survival, 8 for maintenance, 12 for growth. We all need each other. Now, how do we go about using these 5 love languages? First of all, I want us to realize that emotional warmth can be reborn in a marriage and in relationships. All it takes is meaningful connections to be reestablished. So the key is to first and foremost find your primary love language or languages. On the back table, I have 2 questionnaires. One deals with just the 5 love languages. It reminds you what they are, and then you take a little quiz, and it tells you what your primary love languages are. Some people honestly don't know. How can you tell other people what you need if you're not even sure what you need yourself? So find your own primary love language, and certainly find the primary love language of your spouse. Ask your spouse. And if he or she says acts of service, don't argue with them. Oh, that's not your love language. If that's what they say their love language is, believe them. What if you're not sure what your love language is? Well, What is one of the first things you want to do when you want to express love? That's probably what you would like to receive. Or what is the one thing that hurts you the most deeply? Is it something someone says? Is it something that they did? That's another way in reverse to determine what your love language is. These questionnaires in the back, one deals with the five love languages, and another just divides it up into touch, verbal, or task orientation. I think every person ought to take that quiz, it only takes a few moments, and discuss it with the important people in your life. It's a wonderful insight. And by all means, do not abuse the primary language. In fact, build a shrine around it. Do what you can to protect your household from that. And in your marriage, build boundaries to protect your marriage. So, fellas, if you're married to a woman who needs words of affirmation, guess what is the most effective way to hurt her, if that's what you wanted to do? Say hateful things to her. So, if that's your wife's primary love language, make sure you affirm her, and certainly make sure you're careful what you say, because that goes really deep down into the depths of her soul. It's so important to recognize how these principles can and should be used. Let me suggest this. Dr. Chapman recommends that couples periodically play what he calls the tank check game. And that is where you assume that each of you has this emotional tank. People are easy to love when their emotional tank is pretty full. They tend to be in a good mood. They're not edgy. I mean, we just all function better when we feel affirmed, right? So he says, I'll just use the husband for an example. Honey, how is your love tank today? On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being just filled to overflowing, where are you at on a scale of 1 to 10? And if she says anything less than 8, 9, or 10, she says 7 or below, you say, thank you for sharing that. What can I do to help fill your love tank? And then just wait. She'll tell you something. What can I do to help fill it? And then do it. And vice versa. It's really a simple game, but boy, does it ever get down to the root of what people need. I was at a seminar one time, and we were presenting this concept, and a fellow raised his hand and said, I don't like that tank check game. I said, why is that? Because almost every time I ask my wife, scale of 1 to 10, how's your love tank? She says, oh, you know, 5 or 6. And I say, how can I help fill it? Every time, would you help me with the laundry? It says laundry and love. I don't get it. I said, you know what, sir? You don't get it. Your wife connects feeling loved with you helping her with those acts of service. And you're not going to get back from her what you want and hope until she feels like that you're speaking her primary love language. Very simple, but honestly, very profound and very helpful. And I hope that each of you will think about this concept, if you aren't already aware of it, and start applying it in your interpersonal relationships. And for you non-huggers out there, don't take offense if one of us huggers gives you a hug license. We're just in a nice way saying it's okay, and it might be a good way to affirm your relationships. Now, I told you I wanted to give the spiritual application. I want you to listen carefully to this. God knew how we relate to one another. And so, every single one of these five primary love languages, God is speaking to us right now. You want words? The good news of the gospel and the cross speaks more profoundly the words I love you than anything else possibly could, right? How about gifts? For God so loved the world that he gave us his only begotten son. And Jesus gave us his very life. Could we ask for anything more? Remember Hallmark cards? Care enough to send the very best? We got the very best gift in Jesus. How about acts of service? Jesus said over and over again, I came not to be served, but to serve. And everywhere we go, we see Jesus going out doing good. How about quality time? One of the things I love about prayer is you never get a busy signal, right? He's always there for us if we are there for him. And even when it comes to physical touch, in the New Testament, we have an example of Jesus who even reaches out and touches a leper, something you just didn't do because obviously leprosy is very contagious. But he reached out and touched them and they were cleansed from their leprosy. He lays hands upon those children. He lays his hands upon the sick. And even though we all serve the Lord by faith and not by sight, we can still look in the scriptures and receive the touch of the master's hand, right? And in Matthew 5 and verse 6, Jesus says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, and they will be filled up with all of your needs met on a spiritual level, so that you then have an abundance of overflow to reach out to others as well. So the invitation this morning is simple. Would you be filled with the fullness of him that filleth all in all? Philippians 4 and verse 19, my God shall supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory. Jesus truly is there to take care of us, not just to save us, but to provide us with all of our most important emotional needs. And from there, we can reach out to others. Is anybody here who is ready to respond to the gospel so that your cup can just overflow with your needs being met in the right way? Whatever your need is, won't you come as together we stand and we sing.